Thank you for listening to this audio recording from LimoPlanet 2020 Free the Future. The following talk was presented at LimoPlanet, the Free Software Foundation's annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology. For more information on LimoPlanet, visit limoplanet.org/conference. LimoPlanet is a live conference with speakers who often use visual slides in their presentations. We have only selected talks for this audio feed that do not overly rely on visuals, but if you would like to see a speaker's slides, they are available at media.limoplanet.org. LimoPlanet speakers do not represent the Free Software Foundation. As part of our mission to show how important free software is to everyone, we have speakers talking about their use of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take positions on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedoms of all computer users, LimoPlanet is made possible by thousands of individuals who, like you, donate what they can. To keep this work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss.
All right, welcome back, everyone. I would like to introduce JJ, who is going to be covering lessons learned from cultivating free software projects and communities. All right, welcome.
Hey, everybody. My name is JJ Asgar, and let me share my screen so people can see my slides. Share screen. Give me a second. Oh, no. Share your screen. Oh no, 2 seconds, I'm so sorry. I tested this like 3 times beforehand. There we go. Share screen, there we go. Entire screen, share. All right, hopefully everyone can see my screen now. So yes, hi, my name is JJ Asgar. And I'm a developer advocate for the IBM cloud. Yes, I really do have that email address of awesome@ibm.com. And if you don't know, that is a very hard email address to get at IBM. It's a kind of a nice little running joke. I've been there for about a year, year and a half now. Before that, I was a place called Chef Software. It was basically in the DevOps community since 2011. And I've spent a lot of time in the automation space. So I deal with making the cloud a little bit better. The original reason why I got hired is at Chef was to help run an open source community. And a lot of these lessons are from running that community and other ones around it. But first I wanted to mention that this isn't a tools talk. We're not going to talk about different products or different things we're gonna be using. We all know that there are different tools out there, but this is more about the squishy stuff, the human element of what I learned running open source projects. And I might mention one or two just by accident. Some of this is paid software, some of this is free. I lean towards the free ecosystem just because I want to support and help this community. And also, honestly, I like breaking into the code when I can. But there are some things that, I do work for IBM, right? So we do pay for stuff. So let's start off with the most important thing, that hopefully out of all this talk, you really do learn and understand. Scoping your project, when you first start your open source project or your free project is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do. To understand, to stay away from something called scope creep that a lot of corporations use and be able to build into something that is just ridiculous. The first project that I ever was actually involved in was a small Linux distribution called Crux. The irony being is that the first open source project I ever was involved in was a fork of, or a build of a Linux Linux operating system running off the BSD style support tree. I helped run the FAQ, or the frequently asked questions. I helped on IRC and I tested the ports trees. Yay! Okay, perfect. All right, so sorry about that, everybody. That was, you know, technology is hard, right? So let's talk about personal loopback. When you're scoping your, scoping your project, you have to understand you don't want scope creep and you don't want to be a massive problem. And that was the slide previous, and hopefully somebody learned something from that. Next is personal loopback. So a personal loopback is the hardest of them all, but it is the majority of projects out there. You have decided you are starting up a project and you are building it to scratch your own itch. It is your baby, so that is a huge challenge, because it is your baby and it's scratching your own itch. You have to be the leader of that project. You have to recruit people if you want people to be help you with that. And you also, it's a double-edged sword because you have to take responsibility for that project. You need to know it cuts both ways. You make a mistake, you're responsible for it. But at the same time, if you successfully do something, you get to take responsibility for it. It's great. You are the end all be all responsible person for that project. It can be very, very stressful. The next one is corporate backed. So this community doesn't have many corporations, but there are some corporations that support some of the projects in this community. But it is nice to know that there are corporations who realize that their products and their use cases rely on open source software, just like IBM, and we support the different projects out there. 9 out of 10 times, they support these projects because they believe that they can also not only take advantage of it, because honestly they do, but they are trying to make someone's life a little bit better. The only disadvantage though of a corporation backing it is that they really do take ownership of it and they do force things to happen. We're seeing that with some of the governance models in the Kubernetes ecosystem right now, compared to what the OpenStack community, OpenStack governance model, which was open governance. No company could really force a change inside of it. Unlike the Kubernetes, where there's this really big corporation that runs pretty much the whole show. So when you understand the difference, like if you actually spend the time looking at the differences between personally backed and corporation backed, there are some interesting parallels, but at the same time, that there's challenges there too. More importantly, when a corporation really appreciates you, this is more or less what they do. They give you that nice star on GitHub, which admittedly means nothing. And when a corporation backs something and people really do love it, like for instance, Google Reader, they'll just go around and shut it down when they want to, or Oracle eating up all the different software projects out there. It's an issue that we all have to identify and recognize. And luckily this community that we were playing it is associated with, a lot of the times you don't have to worry about it, but the world is bigger than that. The next lesson that I learned very, very early on was empathy for my audience. Believe it or not, as an open source leader or maintainer of an open source project or free software project, you are a performer and a seller. As soon as you get something off the ground, you are recruiting and you are performing in front of everybody. It is something that you have to have. You have to be always on brand with your project. You have to talk about it with the people in the larger community that you're a part of. You have to sell it to people. And unfortunately, there was this really nice quote that I'm about to read out to you that kind of describes an open source project at its best. Also, just to mention this too, if this is normally when I ask the audience, who's ever been to a meetup? And then from there, who has ever tried to start a meetup? And then quickly you'll realize that if you've ever started a meetup and thought that it was going to be a huge hit, there's many times that you're sitting in a room by yourself because no one ever came to that meetup. I've started many meetups myself, and there are many times I had to eat lunch by myself, waiting for someone to show up to have that conversation with me. It's sad, and you're by yourself, but eventually somebody will come by. And that's the same thing with starting an open source or free project, where for a long time, you're sitting there by yourself. Okay. So here's a nice little quote that I put onto a blog post, but it's very relevant in this case. I'm going to take a moment to read it directly to you to make sure you hear every single word. Building and leading an open source community is like organizing a trash pickup in your neighborhood. No one cares about the permissions you have to negotiate to your local board to say yes. They are there to help you beautify the area. It is good to feed them or to celebrate the best workers, but in general, they don't care about the back end at all. Now, at least in the US, and I'm in Austin, Texas, so we have some regulations here. When we try to set up a trash pickup in our local park or something like that, you can't just put out a flyer and say, hey, come help us pick up the trash. You actually have to go to the local community organizers, and they need to get approval for it. If there's an HOA, you have to get approval for that. They'll ask, how are you going to pick up all the different trash from the different locations? How are you going to get trash bags to people? Are you going to have water? Because Texas is very hot and you can't have people falling over and dying of dehydration. What is the space you're going to be doing it? Is there something else going on during the park at that time? There's so many rules and regulations you have to follow. And if you were trying to do this as a volunteer, it is a lot of work. Then you have to recruit people to show up to actually do it for you. And they're not going to care at all about all that work that you've just done. It is frustrating, but it is a passion project, right? Like, you wanted to pick up that trash. I have a larger blog post about it, but I wanted to make sure that there is a beautiful analogy between running an open source project and attempting to organize any type of volunteer efforts, i.e. picking up trash. So hopefully that works. Now, taking it one step farther, one thing you must absolutely do in your project is celebrate. Being that we've had talked about a handful of negative things so far, one thing you need to celebrate. You need to celebrate version one being released. You need to celebrate when one of your users gets promoted to a maintainer. You need to celebrate that you are not only the one using this open source project. Celebrations come so rarely in the open source free ecosystem that when you have an opportunity to celebrate, you must take it. You must stop that production line. And if you're lucky enough to have people in your city or in a relatively close place to yourself, relatively close area to where you work, go to a pub, buy a round. Celebrations are very, very important. Nothing is too small to celebrate, and you have to do it. That is one of the biggest lessons I learned helping run some of the open source projects I've had, is when we did our major release of some piece of software, or even a minor release for that matter, we all got on a video chat, and just instead of us working that day, we all just sat there and talked, like just talked about our lives to get to know each other. That was the way we celebrated. It was great. But take the next direction. You have to realize defeats come. With all celebrations, there's the other side of coins, which is defeats. Things break, things go off the rails, but you have to own up to it. You have to admit it. Just like you celebrating that 1.0 release, when you realized that 1.0 needed a 1.01 release because there was that RM-RF inside of there, you probably should admit it. Open source is a world of transparency, and you need to own up to when issues happen. It's very, very important. And if you don't have that transparency, you'll never get that long-term traction you need to keep going. There are, as long as you have openness and transparency, and people understand that you are willing to talk about both the negatives and the positives, you will have people come along. Adam Jacob, who wrote Chef Infra now, said it best in this tweet. But instead of sharing it, what did you get for it? Probably because of the real positive view, but note, the cost of being an open source maintainer is high. Being an open source leader is higher. People need to suck less. It is very true. Very rarely do people come in and give you positivity when you're working on an open source project. Very rarely do you get to celebrate things. And that's one sole reason why I talked about celebrations. But at the same time, people will come and complain. It's so much easier to complain. And Adam did such an amazing job letting a lot of this roll off of his shoulders. And I've learned so much from him working for him. And I will be thankful for everything I was able to do. So this really does sum up everything that we have to know as open source leaders and maintainers. So now that we've kind of laid down some groundwork, let's actually talk about very, very specific traits of open source projects that are successful. Just general things. And the amazing part about it is a lot of this is very obvious, but it's very rarely do we just call it out and talk about it. So that's what I'm going to do. The first thing is you have to trust. I realize how obvious that sounds, and especially doing free and open source software, you are obviously trusting your community. You have access to your code, but you also need to trust that your project will go the direction you want to. There are you'd be amazed on how many people just throw code out there and don't trust anyone other than themselves to change it. That they own the maintainership, they own the commit bit, and they don't delegate it out. By releasing it to the world, many hands make light work. You'll be amazed on who will step up and help take ownership of something. And it's amazing how much when people are there to help you. They want to help you. That's the reason why they're part of your community, and you need to learn to trust them. It takes a long way to get there, but as soon as you can, it can be extremely rewarding. Next, let's talk about some accessibility issues. Now, luckily that we are actually, like, as I'm talking, I see the IRC going by. But a good friend of mine, his name is Paul Tchaikovsky, is a great tweet right here, where there's like, hey, come join my open source community, join our Slack, and he waves off and says, never mind. I truly, truly believe that, where having accessibility to anyone and everyone is the way to do this, and something like Slack is a problem. It's become a blight on our open source communities in general. Luckily, LibrePlan is running everything through Freenode, so that's amazing. One thing I did really love about the OpenStack communities was that every week at the exact same time, using something called Meetbot, they got on Freenode in the different OpenStack channels, and they discussed problems in real time. They also used mailing lists for longer conversations, but they did all main asynchronous communication through IRC. This also allowed for people from all over the world to join. I know for a fact I had quite a few engineers in our OpenStack Chef community based out of China, and they couldn't get on to some of the stuff that we want to talk on, but with IRC, they were there. It was great. Slack is considered okay in a lot of open source communities right now, and I truly believe this is a problem, and we need to address this. We either need to go back to Freenode and have a way to the majority of the community out there come back to Freenode, or there's got to be some other way to do it. I will say the logistics of getting things like Freenode back through corporate firewalls and things like that is challenging. But as a community, we need to kind of move back from that. The next one, the most important thing that I've ever seen is clear vision. When you start an open source project or when you maintain or become a leader of it, you need to have a clear vision of what you want to get done. As lame as it sounds, a mission statement is extremely important. You need to have a something everyone comes to and says that this is the reason why this project exists. This is the scratch that it is itching. And that clear vision will make sure that your project is successful. Now, the next one is a little bit controversial, but it is true. You need to have a plan to move ahead. Eventually, everyone gets bored. It's true. You're not going to be doing that same open source project. You will need a new challenge one day. You don't lie. You know you will. As an engineer or developer, you have a trait to be a constant learner, and you will want to move forward. Your project will get stale, crusty, or even possibly a burden, right? Some say it's a win. Others say they get jaded and want to move on. You need to have a way to let go of your community or project. And back to the trust statement earlier, you need to be able to trust to give it to someone else. You need to have an exit strategy. You need to be able to say that, okay, in 6 months, maybe I'm changing jobs and I'm not going to have access to this hardware anymore, so I can't run this project. Or maybe you have a kid coming down the line and you're not going to be able to take care of your project because parenthood takes a lot more time than you can take care of a project. So you need to think about these things. And it's very, very, very important to identify that you need to have an exit strategy. And I have one final question. Believe it or not, these are really the most successful traits that I've ever seen, where things are coming together. And the short of it is, honestly, is this even worth the hassle? There's a lot of stuff out there, and I don't know. That's the answer. There are a lot of different ways to take this, and open source and free software are important. Oh, something just happened. And it's sad, really, because there are people out there who don't think it's worth the hassle to deal with this. And just to finish it off by saying, with whoever I'm speaking to, if you come to this talk, you've probably had some level of debate in your head, how to be successful inside of this world. If you want to or do run an open source project, and maybe I hit some chords with this talk. I know I struggle with this every day. And you keep asking yourself, is it worth your time? Can you balance the demands of your users with little to no thanks, and balance the demands of your corporate leaders, if you have any, like me, and balance the loneliness of running a project by yourself? It is. It's a lonely job. I can't answer these. Only you can. But hopefully I've given you some food for thought for this talk, and maybe soon you'll be on stage and talking about your experiences. It's tough. There's challenging. And I really hope somebody has thought about this has given you something to think about. And this went a little bit quicker than I was expecting, especially with those technical problems early. I apologize about those. But that QR code is to a Google form that please, if you're willing to, take a picture of it, hop it up. It's still about 3 or 4 questions. It is for me specifically. I don't give it to anyone else. I'm always trying to become a better speaker. Hopefully you've learned something from this. I appreciate y'all's time. And thank you so much for having me at this conference. And I wish I could have actually been there and shook your hand in Boston, but thank you so much for having me here.
Excellent. JJ, thank you so much. We've got time to open it up for questions, so feel free to put those in the Slack as they come up. Following up on one of the sort of major themes here of, I know that when we're working on our own projects, we tend to be really emotionally invested in them. But do you have any additional sort of advice on keeping a small team of developers motivated when they're working on these open projects?
Yeah. So I guess to maybe rephrase the question a little bit, which is how do you keep your community excited about the project? How do you motivate? It's back to the celebrations. It's back to the learning of teaching or giving your community trust. It's amazing how many people will be encouraged to know that they have the permission to make the choices they need. It's just like working in small teams at your day job, where a good manager is someone who protects you from the stuff that comes from up top. They allow you to be successful and encourage you to make your own decisions. Same as with open source projects or free software projects. You become empowered by trusting your team to make the right choices. Hopefully that answered it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
So I've noticed that in the channel, the CLL guy, CIL guy asked, can you please expand on your thoughts as why it is important to get off people off Slack and back to IRC? Yes. So it's down to the accessibility. Slack is, so there are a lot of people out there who are not technically focused, I think, that they are, they look for something like, they're not the engineers and the community of people who are willing to step above technical challenges. They just need something that they can to work on and focus on. So Slack was able to fill in that space where they kind of bridged the world of IRC and asynchronous communications, where you could be able to work from your phone if you needed to, or your laptop, and you're always on. And that allowed the non-technical people to do it. Unfortunately, if you've actually overused Slack in a larger system or ecosystem, you'll quickly realize that it is a mess of information. At least with Freenode, there are places where people can sit down and gather without needing to go through a third-party application to grab it. IRC is an open platform that you can still just have those long-term conversations and be able to work successfully. I have no idea how to bring people back from Slack. For the longest time, there was actually an IRC bridge to Slack, but they deprecated it about a year ago, which made me very, very confused because Slack is actually built off of IRC. So long story short, CLI guy, I have no idea, and we need to figure that out as a community. So the next question, Son Goku, I did not realize that. I thought that Slack was still built on IRC, and I apologize. I was completely wrong. Sure, I can turn on the camera. Let's see if I got this right. There we go. Hi. Yes. Hi. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I apologize for the hiccups we've had. So the LibraPlanet 5333 question, are you suggesting that IRC is more user-friendly than Slack for most people interested in helping with free software projects? If so, I may have missed it in your talk. Project would be better for focusing on users on the mailing list for bug reports instead of GitHub. No. So These are just general lessons learned I've had from open source communities in general, not specific to the free movement that we are talking here. That's what this is talked about. Luckily, the majority of people involved in this community are technically able and understand how to use mailing lists and things like Freenode, or things like IRC, to be able to communicate. We don't have that luxury in the larger open source community ecosystem. There are people out there who are not technically able, who come along, who want to join these projects. I'm looking at Kubernetes, for instance, that are not they are there to help build marketing, or they're there to build business opportunities between different companies. And they are the people that Slack is exactly perfect for, because they understand how to do funny little GIFs and things. They know how ways to reach out to those people. So it's important. Hopefully I answered your question there. Telsar asked, how would one build up trust between corporations and free software communities? That is a great question. So luckily, I mean, I am wearing the shirt, right? IBM, believe it or not, has trust the open the free communities explicitly. They really do. I work for one of the teams that my job is to be involved in the free communities, to be a good citizen. More corporations are much more guarded about these things. And the only thing you can do is just to be there, play on their field occasionally, and eventually somebody will come along. And for instance, like me, get paid to be involved. And hopefully you'll start seeing more of me in this community, and I can be more involved. Hopefully that answered that question, Telstar. MJW, thank you so much for the that link. I will totally read that in a little bit. So Son Goku, you were saying Matrix is a lot more approachable than IRC these days. That's interesting. I have not actually ever used Matrix myself. Just because of the ecosystems that I've been played in, I've always defaulted to Freenode. If you've actually looked at my my handle on Freenode, and ping me or whatever, you'll notice that I'm even a sponsor of Freenode too. So IRC has always been my default place to go. And it's interesting. I'll have to take a look at Matrix. Thank you for that. And Janique, any advice in the trust area when people fork your project? I actually take it as a flattery of someone forking my project. That is, if somebody takes a project that I've written and they want to take it a different direction and they don't want to upstream it, that's a good thing. That means that I was able to create, or I was able to work and build and scratch an itch that someone else realized can fit that problem, and they can go and take it somewhere else. You should be able to trust them explicitly because you were able to take that and run from it. There's a great feeling. And if they do decide to upstream it, have a real conversation with them and say, hey, what was this doing? How does this expand? And before you know it, you have two people now working on that project instead of just yourself. That's pretty cool, man. All right. Hopefully that answered your question, Jan Eek. Let's see. So Shin, any example of a plan to move on, just like something like putting on out a call for a new maintainer? So yes, that is because you've probably started a project yourself and tried to be successful, and now it's time for you to move on. Hopefully you have a community of people helping you already. Or if you've just decided to let it go, you can put a call out, but hopefully someone in your community that's helped you out, or someone who's put that merge request into your project, or pull request, or whatever terminology you want to use, that patch into your software, reach out to them, ask them to become a maintainer. There's nothing wrong with that. And then you just become less and less involved, allowing them to take the project and run with it. You can always take a look at it later. There's nothing wrong with you coming back, but it's one of those times that you can just kind of bow out over time, or you can just cut and run. That's the beauty of a lot of free open source projects out there, is that people post it they cut and run, and there's nothing wrong with someone coming along and picking up that mantle. See, sorry about that. So moderator, do I have more time or am I getting at the end here? Uh-oh, I just lost it. Is anyone still there? Oh, hello. Okay. That's fine. Oh, I've just been answering them on my okay. So thanks every. Oh, hello. All right, I think I'm done. Thanks, everybody, and appreciate it.